Hello and welcome to the Events Insight, bringing you illuminating tales from our exciting and diverse events industry. With over 40 years combined experience, we've worked far and wide and across multiple sectors in this fabulous world of events, and we've met some amazing businesses and many fantastic characters. We want to share their stories with you, how they got into events, what they've learned on the way, and why they're still here now.
We aim to entertain, enlighten, and hopefully inspire others to join this amazing industry. The fact that Ellen and I are from different backgrounds and running our own distinct businesses highlights the collaborative approach that we and many of our peers have found to be invaluable, and how important these relationships will continue to be. We hope you enjoy our conversations.
Hi Jack, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good this week, thank you.
Good, good. I hear you've been busy this week going back to school. I can't quite believe they've let you back in.
Oh, back to school. Yeah, well, you could say that. You know, this week has been quite busy in terms of dealing with inquiries that we've had related to the podcast from universities and colleges.
Brilliant.
Which has been quite nice. I know you've had an inquiry yourself from one of your local colleges.
Yeah.
And I've been working with a couple of them now. I attended a careers fair, supported a careers fair the other week, and then this week we've been asked to go in and speak at a few universities. So busy at the minute preparing a presentation for one of those, and also we've been working with some colleagues coming together to produce, an industry panel of guests for another university.
Which is
nice. You know, as we said when we started this project, you know, it was... Some of the feel for the project was around the educational side, you know, offering guidance, offering help to people who needed it at this moment. So, yeah, it's been a good week. It's full of positivity this week, Ellen.
And That's good.
Yeah, but I hear you've had some news this week as well. Tell us a little bit more about this national recognition for your PR work, please.
Yes, I am one of the top 50 finalists for Enterprise Nations Top Advisors. It's all a little bit bemusing, and we'll find out next week how I've done. But yeah, it's nice to have a bit of recognition, isn't it? Even if it is a bit bemusing.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely deserved. Definitely deserved.
Thank you.
Let's enough about you. Let's talk about our guest. Do you want to introduce him?
Yes, I'd love to. Okay, this week our guest probably has probably the most interesting journey into events that we've had in the whole of season one. I'm not going to give too much of the game away, but he's very good at juggling tasks, be it designing outdoor events or heading up operations. Rupert Bassadone is the founder of Event Site Design and loves nothing more than clowning around in a field.
Clowning around. he's gonna love that. So should we just let him straight in and get straight on with this conversation?
Yeah, that's far away. So hi Rupert, it's lovely to meet you. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I am very well, thank you. And yeah, thanks for having me. It's great.
Yeah, appreciate your time, Rupert. As I've just been explaining to Ellen, relationships and new relationships is one of the few positives we can take at the minute. And we've had a few chats. I've enjoyed listening to you on some of the things that you've been doing. And I know that our listeners today will enjoy some of the journey that you will take them on and some of the advice that you'll be able to share with them.
Well, hopefully we'll see, eh? always happy to share and kind of be a part of people that are coming into the industry or people already in there. I think that, as you say, building those relationships and just being a part of seeing people doing great things and developing their own careers, it's a certain satisfaction, isn't it, knowing that you've played a part in helping them out. And I just think it's, yeah, any way I can help, it's great.
Completely agree with you. So I think we should crack straight on, and I'll ask you the first question.
Exciting.
Tell people about your current role. Tell us a little bit about what you do, what you're responsible for, in terms of what a daily job would normally look like.
Yeah, sure. Well, varies wildly, but my role is I'm a founder of a company called Event Site Design Limited. And so that's been running for about a year and a half now. and I've got a small team, and the company provides anything from full production and operational management through to CAD design, and that can be teaching you how to use CAD or designing your site plans. So I do some of that still, but I must admit I don't do a lot of it. I've my lead CAD designer, or event architect as I like to call them, Theo is fantastic, and he does a lot of it these days. So I tend to focus on the business strategy and more of the production operation side of our clients, where we're looking after the bigger shows and we're doing a more complete service. So it can be things like WOMAD Festival, Red Bull. We've got various other clients, that sort of stuff.
From the CAD perspective, please share with the listeners, in terms of those who may be interested in it, where could they look and find more details on that, Rupert?
Yeah, what I can probably do is give you a link. So I've got some free resource. So we're right at the back in March, we did a free webinar where we offered, I think, about an hour and a half worth of CAD training online that we did through this webinar. That's available, and in fact, that's if you just go type in event site design on YouTube, you'll find our YouTube channel, and there's that among some other videos as well as there. And I've got a few other resources, so I could probably send you a link to sign up for those to get access to how to access those. Anyway, some of them are paid, some of them are free.
No problem. That will go on with a link to the whole podcast, and that will go on our website. Appreciate that.
All right.
So, in terms of, that's a bit about what you do now, but let's talk about that journey. You know, because we all come from differing backgrounds when we enter into events, and some, let's say, on more differing than others. Do you want to tell people where yours started off, Rupert?
Yeah, indeed. So I was pretty much born in to this industry, and I didn't realize that it would become my career. So I was actually brought up in the circus, and up to the age of 10, 11 years old, I was traveling either with one circus my parents ran, at the time was the largest non-animal circus, I think, in Europe at least. And that was my life up to the age of about 7. And then they split and they did some different things, and they both did different circuses or different touring theatre groups. So I spent a lot of my time traveling around the UK, but also Spain and France, Italy and other places. So we'd travel all the way around. So yeah, a fairly sort of unique and colourful upbringing. But that allowed me, whilst we were traveling and around the various circuses, but particularly the main circus that my parents ran, we'd travel the events and festival circuit. So I'd see all these places and be involved in all of these events on a whole range of different things. And obviously part of being the circus wasn't just being in the circus, was also building the circus. So I got to learn about big top marquees, and I got to learn about building staging and lighting, and all of these elements was all part of my upbringing. I think my first Glastonbury festival was, I was 2 weeks old, and I've been to most of them since. I've not everyone, but most of them. And and that's kind of was my life. And I suppose it was inevitable that I would eventually fall into it. I did have a moment where I tried to kind of rebel against, and actually where I think the term is, people run away to the circus. I ran away from the circus and from that life and tried to fit into a city life, but it didn't last long. And then I basically, that was the beginning. And then I did a lot of work in Glastonbury, and my dad still worked there. And I actually went traveling, and I decided that I'd spend the year traveling, backpacking, deciding what I was going to do with my life. It's like, right, this is it. I'm going to go away. I'm going to have a explore what I really want to do and dig deep. And I spent 12 months having a great time, and the plane landed back in English soil. And I was like, right, what am I going to do? And it wasn't until then that I actually realized, and I was about 19 then. And then it was only then that I realized I could actually make a career out of the world of events. So I had some contacts, And I did some courses. I did my NIBOSH course and did a couple other key sort of industry courses and developed my sort of, I suppose, my CV, made it look like I knew what I was doing as long as, as well as my history. And yeah, I suppose then, and my first job was WOMED actually. And then they all came tumbling on after them.
Yeah. So let's talk about that first sort of paid job that you had in the industry. You know, tell us about some of those experiences of those very early jobs that you had.
Yeah. So aside from the work I did for my family, my very first sort of paid job, and like I was given access, I was very lucky that because my parents had connections. So I was given a black book of someone's and said, right, here's 80, I think it was 80 or 100 contacts. And I sent out, I think it was 80 CVs and letters I sent out, and I got 4 replies. 3 of them were, all right, we'll have, we'll keep you in mind, was basically the answer. Real standard replies. I never heard from them since. And one was, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying, was a chap called Neil Levine from Brand Events, who rang me up and said, all right, yeah, well, we've got a job, starts tomorrow, site crew, 4 days, 100 quid, fancy it? 100 quid a day. I was like, 100 quid a day? This is when I was like 19. I was like, yes, please. So that was it. And I ended up spending more, I think double the amount of time in the end, just because of the way things went. And that was my first paid gig on site, being site crew on a job in Regent's Park. And and that was fantastic. That just led from one to another, and I met people and I networked and met some other people and started doing some safety work, and it developed from there, really.
And people can't see, we're looking at you at the minute, and you're there with a big grin on your face when you're talking about that story. And that's what it does when you give yourself the chance to think back in terms of the journey that you've taken. There are memories that come into your head and you're sharing them with us. And you know, I can see how fond you look back at some of those early memories.
Absolutely. And, you know, there were others. I also went off and worked for a traffic management company, and I spent weeks and months with the same people in a field, stood in a field parking cars or waiting for cars to come in. And it's those moments where you really bond with people. And I think that's a reminder of what the events industry is we spend weeks on end with these people. It is only inevitable that you will either become very attached to them or hate them. It's usually the former. But it's those kind of really, really great memories of the past that I'm still friends with many of those people.
Do you have a favourite event, Rupert, that you've worked on?
I think WOMAD always has a place in my heart. I've been there now for 13 years, and I built, you know, event site design came from my teachings at WOMAD. They were the people that sent me on a CAD course to learn AutoCAD, and I learned my trade there, really. And so I'm very grateful for all of the support that they've given me, and I now lead their operations on their events. And it's not just the UK one, I spent 3 years looking after the one in Abu Dhabi and UAE. I went to Spain with them. I looked after their one in Russia, which was an incredible experience. So I think whilst it's not one particular event, that client has given me some fantastic opportunities, which I'll probably not get again because of this, the way we're doing now, what we're doing now. So really grateful for all of that.
Can you give us a little insight in terms of that work abroad, Rupert? You know, for the listeners, in terms of, you know, you were based, obviously you've been brought up where you'd travelled anyway.
Yeah.
But what was the difference like from when you were being brought up and travelling to when you actually made that change from being working abroad? You know, the different mindset that you had and the different learning that you had from those experiences.
Yeah, and I think what was really interesting was that different countries had such vastly different approaches. And I think the key lesson for me was understanding the cultural and the societies that I was going to be going into, especially with UAE, was obviously vastly different and, you know, arguably more conservative and religious in their approach and their culture. And so it was really important, you know, some really, really important things that you needed to do in order not to get just put in jail, which for us are perfectly normal things. We walk around England and we just, you know, drink on the streets, or there, you know, there are other things where how we talk to women, and there are just some basic rules which are completely different. And so
how did you learn those rules? Who told you about them?
We were lucky in that we were invited over by part of the, it was a government sector. So we were invited over by them, and we learnt on the job. We did some looking into it before we left to fully understand. And there were some great websites for expats, actually. So if you're looking to go and live over there, there's some really good resource to understand all that. And it's really important before you touch down, even actually go, if you're using a local airline like we did with Etihad, for example, just the moment you get on that plane, you kind of need to know what that you're sort of, I suppose, just being culturally sensitive and accepting of what their culture is, really, and making sure you're sort of fitting in as best you can.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually. Whenever I've traveled in the events industry or outside of the events industry to different cultures, invest a little bit of time before you go, just learning about etiquette and protocol and stuff. It's really valuable because you can get it so wrong.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, the polar opposite of that was when we did Russia, which our first trip out there, first or second trip. Oh, no, it must have been our second trip out there. I can't talk about our first trip out there because we didn't end up. Basically, me and the festival director ended up pretty much naked in what they call a banyai, which is a combination of sauna, cold pool, and there was a lot of vodka and sushi involved, but we won't go into that.
Oh, really?
but our second site visit was we brought over our site manager, and we'd spent 2 days looking at various sites, and, you know, it was all really interesting. Had some great food, and we were there with, I think there was the head of tourism of the area, and they said, oh, we should go for some lunch, you know, celebrate. We'd kind of decided on a few key things, and everyone said, what do you want to do, where do you want to go? And the site manager chirped up, so, well, I've been here for 2 days and haven't had vodka yet, and that was that. And I'm going to be honest, from that moment, I can't really remember the rest of the day. And it was still the day. But yeah, we went up to the mountains and we had this incredible, incredible meal. I think they'd literally just, it was lamb. And I'm sure they'd literally just killed the lamb. It was delicious. Best lamb I've ever had. And obviously vodka. A lot of vodka.
Yes, I think that's prerequisite whenever you go to that part of the world, isn't it? You just pickle yourself in vodka.
I do think people have to immerse themselves into local culture and make the effort, you know, and I know we're laughing about it with regard to the vodka, but I think whatever country that you take yourself to as part of your learning experience, you have to be local, you know, you have to try and, you know, immerse yourself in as much of that learning as possible, because it'll make you a better person,
yeah,
you know, by getting that understanding.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then that leads just both from a building rapport and networking point of view, but also from understanding how they work from a professional putting on an event point of view is entirely different in every single country. And that's right from the type of equipment that's available, how they install it, what their safety procedures are. Everything is very, very different. It's really important. And if you can, as Elaine was saying, to teach yourself before you get there is really important. Do your homework, but also try and link up with people who already understand how to do things out there and get some local knowledge, because you will quickly make mistakes if you don't have that support.
I remember an experience I had when I went away with the British Council to China, and we took quite a few younger individuals, professionals with us. And, you know, getting them to understand what was acceptable and not acceptable, but also where you may cause offence, you know, in terms of just try just engage and try. You may not like, but you at least by trying, you aren't offending. And there's some of the banquets that we went on were absolutely amazing banquets. But you had some of the younger individuals who were, I can't eat that. Look at it.
Oh, no.
And you just think, just try it. Even if you don't finish it, just try it. You know, and I even got to the stage at some point where I was eating so much and I just kept getting more and more food piled on my plate. And it was a case of you're offending them because they think as though they haven't provided you with enough. And I was brought up, you know, with my grandfather. My grandfather was a prisoner of war, and I was brought up with the culture of making sure you finish everything on your plate. You know, be thankful for what you get. So even if it was something that I didn't like, I would always eat it.
Yeah.
But I actually had to change my mindset when I was across there in terms of I had to leave a little bit of something, you know. Yeah. But I think that is important, you know, that whole understanding of learning a bit from the people around you is really positive, but also doing your own homework, you know, take it upon yourself to make yourself a better you by doing some of that time.
Absolutely. And you know, I obviously didn't want to drink all of that vodka. It was just trying to fit in.
You're just being polite.
Just, you know, just trying to show them.
So willing, yeah. We're talking a bit about advice for people, and that's a good one about learning about where you're going before you go there. But what's the biggest learning point you've had during your time in events? You know, could be something you've experienced or something you were given as a piece of advice yourself.
Yeah, I think probably my favourite lesson I've learned was actually my very first WOMAD festival at Charlton Park in England. And that was 2007. And if you can try and picture the scene, it had been raining for 2 weeks solid. I don't know if anyone remembers 2007, but it was one of those wet years for most events. Mm. And in fact, we were in Wiltshire, and just next to us is Gloucestershire, and they were looking at evacuating certain people because there were floods. You know, that was the sort of situation we were in. And we were trying to put a festival on in a mud bath, and it was carnage. And that was my first experience of being at the helm of a site office at a festival. I'd obviously been involved in events throughout that time, but never in that role. And ultimately in sort of had responsibility for certain elements of this build. And I think there's a great, one of my favorite quotes, which is, if you can keep your head when all around you have lost theirs, then you probably haven't understood the seriousness of the situation. I think it's David Brent who is to paraphrase someone else's quote.
Yeah.
I think people just misunderstood my ignorance for me being unflappable and not panicking in a crisis situation. But what that did teach me is that was a really vital tool. So whilst I was standing there going, what on earth? And people were going, why are you not freaking out? And I think that's the reality. It's like, no matter what happens, freaking out and having sort of emotional outbursts and just panicking will solve nothing. And it did stick. And I did learn very quickly that it was a vital skill to master, not to get caught in what I call the emotions of the moment. Take a step back, assess the options, and then take action. That doesn't mean take a step back, assess the situation and freak out and not do anything about it. It's really important. The last step's really important, and not to hesitate and take too long. Like, taking the action, that's really, really important.
Yeah, you don't want to be seen by your crew to be running for the car and disappearing in the distance.
But also it's, I think a lot of people that end up getting into a position where they have to make decisions aren't very good at making decisions. And actually not making a decision is much worse than making the wrong decision.
Absolutely,
in my opinion. And obviously you judge it, don't you? You kind of look at the situation and go, well, what are my options? And I think if you can get to 51% certain, then you're in a good place. That's the best you're going to get.
And be ready to deviate.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, exactly. You know, if it's okay if you've got an option to change because the scenario changes, then that's great too. But don't wait for trying to find a perfect decision, because I think perfect only lives in hindsight.
Yeah, I mean, me and Ellen have had a previous conversation. I don't think it was on the podcast. I think it was outside of it, where we were talking the difference between a good manager and a leader. And we'll have all worked with good managers who are good individuals. But that leadership role, to be able to say something and people will follow, you know, is quite critical. You know, 100%. It really is, especially when making key decisions, you know, that will affect so many people. You need to be able to lead, and people need to appreciate your leadership role and follow when they have to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Okay, well, we've got a number of listeners on here from a number of different backgrounds. You know, some may be new to events, new graduates. Others may be in a position of looking to change their roles, maybe even looking to get into events. If you could pick out some advice for them, what do you think it would be? What's some of the best advice you could give to those individuals?
I think that the number one, the greatest piece of advice I was ever given was to invest in myself. And that applies to any situation, any scenario, and to be honest, any industry, but it particularly, it does apply to the events industry. So invest in yourself means investing in your education. And I think that's just utterly vital, because the greatest asset you have available to you is you. So there are all sorts of ways you can invest in yourself. There's all sorts of fantastic training available that's specific to the industry. There's courses, there's qualifications, and have a look at, you know, think about what it is that you want to do, in which direction you want to go in this enormous industry that we call events, and pick things that are going to help give you that unfair advantage. And then I think in terms of trying to give yourself a bit of future-proofing, safeguarding against any scenario, is having a service, is, you know, getting quite specific now to events, is having a service that that allows you to provide a service and, more importantly, get paid for not just the show work, but actually the advance work. Now, that sounds quite specific, but it's one thing that I'm incredibly grateful for our business, is actually I think it must be 75 to 80% of our income comes from our work, which is advancing for an event. And in fact, it really is only 20-25% of our income comes from the actual show itself. So as heartless as it sounds, the event actually doesn't need to go ahead for us to get paid. And that's just so important regardless of any scenario, because it just means that you've got that consistent work coming in. Now, I'm not saying don't be, you know, a sound engineer or provide AV equipment. But if you are going to do that, think about how you're going to structure that business so you are charging with an element in advancing. So unfortunately, most promoters or organizers will just think, well, I'm not paying for my lights because they haven't turned up. But the reality is that that lighting company has had to test it, has had to prep it, has had to do the lighting design, you know, do all the stage CAD designs, has had to load the truck, has had to maybe use freelancers, so contract freelancers. There's an element of work there that needs to be done before they, well, a huge element that needs to be done before they arrive on site. And I think the mistake they make is not properly splitting that out and how they charge that.
There's an awful lot goes into the preparation of event. Like you say, it's the most of the work in many respects goes on before the event.
Yeah, and there's lots of roles that are specifically to do with advancing. You know, that's what our business does. We produce CAD designs for CAD plans, floor plans for For the licensing phase, for the planning phase, the operational, the pulling all the production together. Yes, it could be stage plans as well. So we are already doing all of that. And in fact, that's a big part of what we do. And then, of course, we do on-site management as well. But because we've got all of that, it, even if the event doesn't go ahead, as long as people are planning events, then we've got a job.
So next, Rupert, we have our quickfire round. Hope you're ready to share with the audience. Today's quickfire round is sponsored by Meow Networking. Meow brings up to 4 business people together at random to video network from the comfort and convenience of their own home or office. Save time and money on making money. So, straight across to you then, Ellen.
Okay, Rupert, are you ready?
I am ready. Contender ready.
Okay, let's go. Right. Quick answers, please. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Hotel or apartment?
Apartment.
Winter or summer event?
Summer.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Both, but early bird.
Apple or Android?
Apple.
Yes. Film or book?
Book.
What's your favourite go-to social beverage? Vodka, probably.
No, anything but. Social would probably be beer. I love a Moretti. Italian is my background, see.
Ah, okay. Favourite event location?
Oh, a field. Any field.
Any country?
Oh, my goodness. Any country. A bit. Everywhere has just been beautiful. So England is still my favourite.
As long as it's a field and not too muddy.
Yes, true.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
Ooh, controversial.
You know what else is controversial? I don't have an Apple phone.
Oh, no.
Sorry, go on.
What makes you laugh the most?
My goodness, my friends, some friends just, every time I need a laugh, I'll ring up. There's a couple of friends that will just, I know, will get me laughing.
Great. Okay. This is a tricky question really for you. What did you want to be when you were young?
Christ. What did I want to be when I, you know, when I was really young and probably when we were still in, or just coming out the end of the circus, I loved Lego. Like, oh my God, I spent my life playing Lego, and I would make Lego tours of circuses and theatre acts. And I'd create Legos of lorries and all this. And I'd have all of this mechanics of how they put up the flying trapeze. And I'd just spend hours doing all that. So I guess I probably always wanted a tour with my own theatre group or circus.
If you could have 3 guests to dinner, dead or alive, anyone you like, who would they be?
Okay. Probably one would be as a chap called Ed Milet, who is an American billionaire, and he's got a podcast as well, The Ed Milet Show. And it, one of those people where I always kind of think, I'm never really sure whether I want to listen to it, but when I listen to one of his podcasts, it's just like, oh my God, it's so good. And he just seems to speak the truth a lot. So definitely him. It's such a tough one. I've never answered this question before.
Yeah, the first guest you're hoping pays for the bill as well, aren't you, if he's American billionaire?
I would happily pay for the bill to spend an hour and a half in his presence. I mean, you know, I suppose because of where I am in my life, that I would go for anyone who I think that I could learn from to fast track what I'm trying to do with my business. And they don't have to be millionaires or billionaires, but anyone who's got enormous success, not just with a business, but with their life, how they're balancing that. I would pick any one of them at the moment. I'm not going to go down the Gandhi route or things like that, I'm afraid. I want a catalyst for pushing the business forward. So
yeah.
Anyone can gain knowledge from on that side.
Okay. Final question. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
You know, as a child, you always think about this, don't you? You always think about all the different things. And I think stopping time would be so cool.
Yes.
I would love to stop time there. It would be, you'd have a lot of fun as well, wouldn't you? You'd have a lot of fun, but you could also get so much more done.
Yeah, you could catch up with everything.
I could fit in a game of golf in 10 minutes. Just, well, in no minutes, just go and play some golf. How cool would that be?
Good answer. I like that one. Not had that one before.
Oh, dear.
Thanks, Rupert. That was really good fun. Really interesting story. It's been great talking to you. Thanks again for joining us. And yeah, it's great to hear about you running away from the circus, surviving all that vodka. And I definitely want to hear more about your first trip to Russia one day.
Yes, what happens in Russia stays in Russia.
Yeah, the sign of a good eventer, you don't give away what happens at an event. Share certain stories. Yeah.
Rumour has it might end up in a book one day, so I'll let you know about that.
But no, likewise, I just appreciate the time that you've taken to share some of your advice, guidance and stories with our listeners. We hope that they get something from it and look forward to hearing more about how your business continues to grow and get stronger as we move forward, Rupert.
No, thanks very much. Absolute pleasure. And I think you guys are doing a great job. I'm always happy to share whatever knowledge I can, however useful it may be for people in the industry or coming into the industry. So it's an absolute pleasure to be a part of the show. And I think you're doing a fantastic job and good luck with the rest of it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye, mate.
The Events Insight was brought to you by 67PR and Saywood Marketing and Events. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, write a short review and spread the word.